Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada.
Paramahansa Paribraja Gacharya Stotara Sarasi Srimad's Divine Grace, Hesi Bhakti Vedanta Goswami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jaya Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Paribhraja Gacharya Stotara Sarasi Srimad's Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prems of Sri Krishna, Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Adaita Gadara, Sri Vasadi, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopina, Sham Kundara Kundi Giri Gopadhan Ki Jai, Sri Sri Vrindavandam Ki Jai, Sri Sri Navritam Ki Jai, Sri Sri Mayapuram Ki Jai, Sri Sri Maturadam Ki Jai, Sri Sri Jagannathpuridam Ki Jai, Sri Sri Yojadam Ki Jai, Tulasi Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Gangamaya Ki Jai, Javanamaya Ki Jai, Gaur Premanandi, Hari Nama Sankirtan Ki Jai, Shri Shri Brihad Madanga ki jai, Transcendental Prasadam Distribution ki jai, Shri Shri Gornitai ki jai, Shri Jagannath Baladeva Subhadra ki jai, Shri Radha Girir Hare ki jai, Shri Shri Govardhan Dham ki jai, Shri Prabhupada Centennial ki jai, Shama Veta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Chaivam Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Dato Jayam Udirayat Nastaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. A reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, 24th Chapter, 38th Verse. See if I can read the Sanskrit without my glasses. Nama Urja Ishe Troya Pataye Yagya Ritase Tripti Daya Cha Jivanam Nama Sarva Asatmane Nama Urja Ishe Tvaya Nama Urja Ishe Traya Pataye Yagyaretase Pataye Yagyaretase Triptidaya Cha Jivanam Triptidaya cha jivanam Namasarvarasatmane Namasarvarasatmane Nama urjayi shetraya Pataye yagyaretase Triptidaya cha jivanam Namasarvarasatmane. Nama Urjayi Shetraya. Pataye Yagyaretase. Triptidaya Cha Jivanam. Namasarvarasatmane. Nama Urjayi Shetraya Pataye Yagyaretase Triptidaya Cha Jivanam Namasarvarasatmane. Apologies. Shetraya Pataye Yagyaretase Triptidaya cha jivanam Namasarvarasatmane. Manajis Nama Urjasaitaya Ataya Yagyaretase Triptidaya cha jivanam Namasarvarasatmane. Nama Urjayi Shetraya Triptidaya cha jivanam Namasarvarasatmane. Nama Urja Shudhir. Pataye Yagyaretase. Diptidaya Sajivanam. Namasarvarasatmane. Namaha. I offer all obeisances unto you. Urje, unto the provider of the Pitriloka. Ishe, the provider of all the demigods. Traya, of the three Vedas. Pataye, unto the master. Yajna, sacrifices. Retase, unto the predominating deity of the moon planet. Triptidaya, unto him who gives satisfaction to everyone. Cha, also. Jivanam, of the living entities. Namaha, I offer my obeisances. Savarasa Atmane, unto the all-pervading super soul. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, you are the provider of the Pitrilokas as well as all the demigods. You are the predominating deity of the moon and the master of all three Vedas. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you because you are the original source of satisfaction for all living entities. Responsibly, my Lord, you are the provider of the Pitrilokas as well as all the demigods. You are the predominating deity of the moon and the master of all three Vedas. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you because you are the original source of satisfaction for all living entities. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When the living entity is born with this material world, especially as a human being, he has several obligations unto the demigods, unto the saintly persons, and unto living entities in general. As enjoined in the Shastras, Devarshibhu Tattva Nrinam Pitrinam. Thus one has an obligation to one's forefathers, the previous hierarchy. Lord Shiva prays to Lord Aniruddha to give him strength so he can become free from all obligations to the pitas, demigods, general living entities, and saintly persons completely engaged and completely engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord. As stated, Devarshipu tattva nrinam pitrinam nakinkaro nayam nrini charajan Sarvatmanaya Sharanam Sharanyam Gato Mukundam Pariritya Kartam. From Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 41st verse. One becomes free from all obligations to the demigods, saintly persons, pitas, ancient forefathers, etc., if one is completely engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. Lord Shiva therefore prays to Lord Aniruddha to give him strength so that he can be freed from such obligations and entirely engage in the Lord's service. Soma, or the predominating deity of the moon, is responsible for the living entity's ability to relish the taste of food through the tongue. Lord Shiva prays to Lord Aniruddha to give him strength so that he will not taste anything but the prasada of the Lord. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung a verse indicating that the tongue is the most formidable enemy among all the senses. If one can control the tongue, he can easily control the other senses. The tongue can be controlled only by eating prasada offered to the Lord. Lord Shiva's prayer to Lord Aniruddha is meant for this purpose, triptidaya. He prays to Lord Aniruddha to help him be satisfied by eating only prasada offered to the Lord. Hmm. Om Agyanati Miranda Sagaranjana Sarakaya Taksuran Vilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Guravenam Hasri Chaitanya Manuvistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Sva Padantiham. The first line? Within this material. Yeah, I was wondering what that was. When the living entity is born within this material world, especially as a human being, he has several obligations unto the demigods. I guess this is the older version, huh? Oh, really? There's a vast network of karma, we might say, when we come into this material world, when we're born within this material world. Sometimes, I guess in general, people think that little babies are innocent, or young children are innocent. But actually, it's a great punishment that we're carrying with us to have been born within this material world. And as we know, some are born rich, some are born poor, some are born beautiful, some are born not so attractive. Some live for a short time, some live for a long time. Because we understand that the workings of karma are very complex and very difficult to understand. But just to be born in this material world is a symptom that we have rebelled against the Supreme Lord. So we're not innocent when we come to this world. When some little baby dies, seemingly prematurely, we understand there's a karmic reaction, some punishment has taken place. So, of course, Lord Shiva is very, very advanced. He's said to to embody 88% the qualities of Vishnu. He's a very, very powerful demigod. Not an ordinary person can ever be imitated. Srila Prabhupada said sometimes people try to imitate Lord Shiva by taking a ganja, because Lord Shiva drank an ocean of poison. But Lord Shiva could drink an ocean of poison. He did, and he wasn't affected by it. So no one can compare to Lord Shiva. But as Krishna himself took on a spiritual master and a teacher, and Balaram, Lord Chaitanya, took on a spiritual master, he was also the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Lord Shiva also, for purposes of instruction and for the desire to attain more and more purification, to be more solely devoted in pure devotional service, because he's great, he feels very humble. He's praying to the Lord to engage in full devotional service. Lord Shiva also has a very intimate relationship with Lord Krishna. When Lord Krishna manifested himself as Mohini Murti, the most beautiful woman in the universe, he was, as we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the ninth canto, he was playing a game, kind of an internal pastime with Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva became attracted by this irresistible form, a beautiful female form. This was an arrangement by Krishna. Lord Shiva is never actually disturbed. He's never sexually agitated. Even when his consort is becoming very, very intimate with him, even touches the private parts of his body, he's not agitated. But in order to teach a lesson to everyone, he became very attracted to this Mohini Murti, who was, of course, irresistible as a pastime of Lord Krishna. So he tried to embrace her. And every time he tried to embrace her, she slipped away, just disappeared, slithered away from his embrace. And then she began to run away from him. And Lord Shiva, apparently infatuated with this beautiful female form, began to run after Mohini Murti. And as they were running, the Lord in this female form ran before many great sages who were meditating in their hermitages. And as they were passing by the great sages, by the arrangement of Lord Krishna, Lord Shiva was passing Semana as if he were overly infatuated with sexual desire. And this was witnessed by the great sages. The arrangement had been made for Krishna not to bewilder Lord Shiva, but to instruct the sages, because they began to, in their meditation, they began to see this, they saw the spectacle, and they began to think, what is this? If even it appears Lord Shiva can be overcome by lust, what can I expect to achieve here? An ordinary living entity sitting in meditation, how can I be successful? So in order to teach them a lesson of how powerful Maya is, the Lord performed this pastime, and Lord Shiva was apparently bewildered, although he is never actually bewildered. But by the inscrutable arrangement of the Lord, because he's the perfect instructor, he was teaching this lesson to the great sages. And all the great living beings, not only like Lord Shiva, but all, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is mentioned in this verse. He has a great prayer, a great song about purification of the tongue. And his son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they all characterized themselves as imperfect, as very, very proud, very insignificant, very poor in their devotional service. Even Lord Chaitanya himself, he once said that I'm only a pretender. He was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but playing the role of a devotee. He once said that I'm a great pretender. I act as if I'm a great devotee of Krishna, but actually I'm not. He said once that if I were actually devoted to Krishna, then I would not be able to even maintain life in this body. I would immediately leave this body. So I'm just a pretender, he used to say. So this is the humility of all great souls. They accept this position. Haridas Thakur also is very humble, even though he was an Amacharya of the holy name. He would not try to enter the temple of Jagannath because he knew it would cause social disturbances. So he felt himself unqualified, and he just gazed at the chakra on the top of the temple from his bhajan kutir. Prabhupada once told us that this is equal to seeing the deity. If you just see the chakra on top of the temple, it's equal to seeing the deity in the temple. So he was very satisfied with that. And out of his satisfaction and his humility and his great devotion, Lord Chaitanya personally came to see him. So he actually not only had darshan of the chakra, which is as good as Krishna himself or Lord Jagannath, but the Lord personally came to him personally and spoke with him in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So as Prabhupada points out, in the living entities born in this material world, there are many obligations, as this famous verse says, Devarshi Bhutapta Nrinam Pitrinam. One becomes obligated in this great network. It's like a network, just like we have the internet. It's a big network. There's media networks that go out, and they involve millions and millions of people. There's also a network of obligations, a network of Maya. When we're born in this world, we're sort of bound up, just like we read about Bali Maharaj. He came bound up by his greed, and he was tied up with ropes. He couldn't move. So as we come into this material world, there are so many what we might call karmic obligations. We're obligated to our parents, to our forefathers, to all the living entities, to all the great sages, to the demigods, the rishis, the forefathers. And these are real obligations. But Gatomukunam Parichikartam, the conclusion of the Bhagavatam is that if one can become a pure devotee or engage in pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord, then all these obligations can automatically become fulfilled. Lord Vishnu had asked Daksha at one time to, with his progeny, to progenate or propagate living entities all over the universe. But he became frustrated when his sons, the Haryashvas and the, what was the other group called? The Suvalashvas? Haryashvas and, what is it? Savalashvas. He had 10,000 sons, the Haryashvas and the Savalashvas, another 1,000 sons. Narada Muni, traveling all over the universe as a great liberated soul, instructed these sons of Daksha that they should become brahmacharis, that they shouldn't take families and progenate the universe as Lord Vishnu instructed Daksha to do. So he gave all the reasons why you should not get entangled in material life. You young boys, you should take this opportunity in early life, as Prahlad Maharaj instructed from the very beginning of life, you don't have to wait. You can take the renounced order, or you can give up material life. You can make a vow. You can be a lifelong celibate. Of course, very few people can do this nowadays. Practically impossible. But these are the instructions Narada Muni gave. They could be Nastika Brahmacharis. So this happened, and they understood that these were actually very intelligent instructions. And in this way, they were disobeying an order. We might say not only from their father, but from the order of Lord Vishnu. So this angered Daksha. He thought, my instruction from the Supreme Lord is being frustrated. What can I do? And then he criticized Narada Muni for instructing his sons to take this vow of celibacy. He said, you're wearing the dress of a mendicant, but actually you have no right to do so because you're not following Vedic instructions. And he became so angry, he had a tendency to become angry, that he cursed him. And his curse was that because he was not acting properly, he was wearing the dress of a mendicant and he was giving wrong instructions, that he would have to move throughout the universe for all eternity. He could never stay in one place for more than a few days. And interestingly, Prabhupada writes in the purport to that verse, there's a series of verses there, that he says, sometimes people become angry when we instruct renunciation. And he gave the example that he had, when he had come to the West, he had many young disciples. And sometimes their parents became angry because they were instructed to give up their materialistic ways of life. Parents wanted them to sometimes take up their business, or they had some materialistic ambition for them to achieve a nice family, for them to have a good position in society, take over the business, get a good education. And when Prabhupada came to the West, many young people dropped out of the mainstream current of material life. So sometimes the parents became very angry and even tried to kidnap their children. There's a whole history there. So Prabhupada writes about this and says that maybe the parents of my young disciples have also cursed me that I can't stay in any one place very long and I have to travel. We heard also that Prabhupada used to complain that whenever he traveled, that they'd always fixed up his room, and every room he went to stay in smelled like fresh paint. So he always complained everywhere he went, smelled like fresh. He could never get a place that didn't have odors of ether and alcohol in it. So this was kind of a curse. But Prabhupada writes in the purports that now, he was saying, in my old age, I want to transfer this curse to my disciples, especially to my brahmacharis, sannyasis. I want them to travel all over the world and stay in one place for only a few days so that I can continue my translating work. I can sit in one place very peacefully and translate and produce these books, which he was instructed to do by his Guru Maharaj. Of course, as Prabhupada once said, I practically had to walk through fire to start this movement. He really didn't get much of a chance to retire. He kind of wrote on the fly, you might say, and didn't really get that opportunity. But nonetheless, he translated perfectly for, as he said, the next 10,000 years. The constitution would be the purports of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Daksha was very disturbed at this. Narada Muni, he was powerful enough to counter-curse Daksha and do anything he wanted, but he, as also a great soul who felt very humble, like Lord Shiva and like the other great sages, he accepted very nicely, just like Chitraketu. He was also cursed to become a demon. He accepted it very nicely. Didn't care. Whatever you say is the right thing for me. I deserve it. Of course, Daksha, he didn't realize. In anger is said to destroy the good qualities of human beings. Didn't realize that actually Narada Muni was not in violation of the Shastras. Although one is obligated, if one becomes a devotee of Krishna, these obligations are fulfilled. And if one of the obligations to the sages, to fulfill those obligations to the sages, is to be brahmachari, to fulfill a vow of brahmachari. That's one way that the sages, the great sages of yore, are fulfilled. Although to fulfill the obligations to one's parents, one is meant to have progeny, and one is meant to undergo certain austerities to satisfy the demigods. But to satisfy sages, one can undergo the vow of brahmacharya. So Narada Muni wasn't actually violating the Vedic Shastras. He was fulfilling one of the important injunctions. And by Krishna's arrangement, the order of Lord Vishnu that Daksha would that if one actually enters into pure devotional service, which is free from jnana yoga, karma yoga, if one is fortunate to really engage in pure devotional service, then this is the perfect form of liberation, liberation as mentioned in the previous verse. One tries to enter different types of by being a yogi or by being a jnani, by being a karma, by practicing the different types of yoga. But as it is stated by Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Rasamrita Singh, there is pure devotional service which is far superior to Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga, very, very far superior to all forms of yoga. So this is what happens when one can actually enter into pure devotional service. It's not that one doesn't satisfy one's relatives or one's forefathers in apparently mundane ways, but by being a devotee of Krishna, Krishna gives sarvasyaham, sarvasyaham, really sannibhisto. Krishna gives the internal instructions, the intelligence, how to go about fulfilling all obligations and desires, and all the different forces that one's obligated to. One gets the intelligence how to fulfill those desires by entering into pure devotional service. We have an example of Prabhupada in his life when he was in his last days. He spent many, many hours instructing his followers how to care for his family, how to provide for them, how to take various accounts out of his almira and fix them up so that they would be set up. So it's not that he was ignoring obligations, but Krishna was giving him direct intelligence how to fulfill all his obligations. So even though we have so many obligations to society, to our friends, to our relations, to our community, how to fulfill them, nobody knows, because the sense of what to do is not known by anyone, not correctly, not perfectly, unless one is a devotee of Krishna. Prabhupada once gave the example of the housewife who had a lover who was tending her husband more carefully, more attentively, because her mind was fixed on the lover. It's a bit of a gross example, but the idea is that if one is fixed on remembrance of Krishna, then one can fulfill all obligations, material obligations, very quickly, very naturally. So Lord Shiva is praying for a daya or mercy from the Lord. Everyone needs the Lord's mercy, and if we become transparent enough to let that mercy flow through us, then we can fulfill all obligations and please the Supreme Lord. So I'll stop here. Comments or questions?
it says curiosity killed the cat. So, of course, doubt is also necessary. As Lord Kapila mentioned, it's one of the five principal components of intelligence: doubt, correct apprehension, misapprehension, memory, and sleep. So it's not that it's necessarily in and of itself an evil or bad. The Prabhupada also gave the example of the intelligent boy who took the watch apart to find out how it worked. He wanted to know how it worked. So to try to, and in the Ishapanishad it said that we should learn the science of nations along with the science of Krishna. So this is actually a symptom of being intelligent. That's why these great sages, they sometimes want to know, well, what is actually Maya? How does it work? And what is it? So, and the lesson is given by the Lord in different manifestations. Usually it's a very kind of hard lesson, but this is what it looks like. This is what it feels like. And in the end, they realize that this is actually not what I wanted. I wanted to know, but there's a kind of punishment that goes with it. If one becomes too doubtful or too curious, even after instruction has been given, intelligent instruction, then we have this kind of syndrome of people who stay on the outside of pure devotional service, just like we have with our movement. We were talking about this the other day. It's growing, growing, growing. And Prabhupada said, oh, now our enemies will come out when this deprogramming phenomenon, the first appearance of a person phenomenon, started to come out. And we see that this actually grows. So one way it's explained sometimes by materialists is a weather report. And it'll say partly sunny. But it also means partly cloudy. So you can look at it in different ways. You can say it's partly sunny, I'll say it's partly cloudy. Or someone's will say it's a nice day, and the person who's got sort of a negative attitude will say, yeah, but it's going to rain. And there's nothing you can argue with it, because it is partly cloudy, it is going to rain. But it's a matter of attitude. It's a matter of where we place our faith, ultimately. Do we place it in Krishna's ultimate rightness of what he says and what he guarantees? Zami Buddha Yogaman, if he says, I'll give you the intelligence, we accept that. Or are we going to continuously stay on the outside and say, well, you know, maybe he really won't. Maybe this will happen. Or you know, maybe I have to experience more and more of Maya to understand what it is. And sometimes we as devotees, you know, we hear, but sometimes devotees fall into that trap of thinking, I've got to more deeply understand the workings of Maya to get involved very much in reading newspapers or maybe even enjoying material nature so that I can feel a better understanding of how it works. So as you're rightly pointing out, to be too curious or too doubtful or too speculative about, you know, it's a symptom of not having deep and complete faith, both in Krishna and also that Maya is ultimately not satisfactory. I think that Sivasan Lurie and Buddy Miller's classic, someone asked him to quote a Prabhupada saying that the reason my movement is successful, he said, is that I'm convinced that there's nothing in this material world can bring me happiness. There's nothing ultimately worthwhile within my to really embrace. So one has to be very convinced of that, that there's so much enjoyment in the material world, but none of it is, it's like so many zeros without it. This is a letter that Mahaprabhu sent him. Can you check any Bible? Yeah, because when Prabhupada mentioned, he didn't give a reference. So this is really a good name. Anything else? Sometimes in the past, people have said, I'm going to take sannyas and leave a wife and children with nothing. So sometimes it's very wrongly construed that one can prematurely give everything up. But if we study the great sages carefully, and of course Prabhupada is the most immediate one that we have exposed to study, we can see what, even though he took sannyas, what he would care to take to see that obligation for all of us, especially for his family members. It's really, really difficult. And other examples we can cite are how he was very meticulous in how devotees could manage his movement. I remember he was teaching bookkeeping to John Swinger. He was teaching how to not miss a single thing. He would write letters sometimes to overseas banks and other banks. They would receive transfers of money from the United States, sometimes $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. And if they would make a mistake in the bank transfer, if they didn't credit the account in India for a building project, say in Bombay, if they missed it by a few rupees or even a few prices, he would personally write a letter. It was in the letters book, so he would have made an error in the debit of his $2 million, please correct this and make sure the records are straight. So this is a very important point, that sometimes by giving this verse, people get the impression that they can abandon everything. Of course, Lord Chaitanya was Krishna himself, and he had to undertake these hardships to breathe. This is an exceptional case. And again, the philosophy of it is that one should be completely convinced that, as Rupa Goswami says, if you want to enjoy society, friendship, and love, don't even. He says it's very dangerous to look at Govinda, because he will cause you to give up friendship, society, and love. But giving up means not prematurely or not artificially. For example, Siddhartha Pandit took what was called Sukha Sannyas, that was kind of like Vanaprastha. And most of Lord Chaitanya's followers, most of the ones who did it, were householders. And Krishna consciousness spread in South India, where Lord Chaitanya spent most of his time teaching, although he was the sannyasi, and there were a few other brahmacharis, but they were preaching the Nam Hat program, where they were like Kurma. Kurma wanted to give up everything, renounce his family, and Lord Chaitanya said, no. You go back to your village, teach to your family and friends, and make millions and thousands of devotees. And this was the system that formed into what we sometimes call cell teaching today. they would gather together, and they would chant. They would speak from the Bhagavatam, they would take the Shadam, they would speak philosophy to each other, they would chant together, they would instruct one another how to serve the devotees, they would engage in teaching activities, and they would become very, very convinced and fired up that this has to be conveyed, it has to be given to others in a very missionary spirit. So they would become empowered. That's the word probably they become empowered. And they would go to other villages and they would convince them to their friends and family come. And they would again take another little group of the whole village would become this way millions of people vote. So it's not exactly to imitate their souls. But you have to be very responsible also. But philosophically we have to be convinced that the only lovable object is Krishna. And if one loves Krishna, then one can actually deal with everything else there is. One can love everybody, all things, all things, all things, all things. So philosophically, we have to do some things. We have to repose our love in Krishna at the same time. There's a tendency to think that we don't have to do anything. Just like the example that we were in. We have to tend to our mundane affairs very meticulously. That's part of the symptom of being a great devotee. Of course, in India and in times past, sages, and especially in India, even today, a sannyasi can go from door to door. And in a loincloth, and wrinkled clothes, and just a stick with a little tied up bundle of goods on it, and people will respect and appreciate it. In the gift of Vairagya way of healing, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta, although he lived in India, he sometimes, when he would bring chaturmas, he would mix it all in rice and beat it off with some meritorious hands behind his back. He also sometimes rode in British cars, had a very expensive British overcoat and turban on, and would sit with politicians and governors. Speak to Westerners, he would intermingle very he would speak it on the very now about philosophy. So it's according to, as Prabhupada said, utility is the principle. In this day and age, in this time and place, you have to dress like he did is almost the rule of the day, you know, to be very presentable. Because people in this day and age are very superficial, judges about how we vote, the kind of words we use in the speech. How nice the books are, you know, the nice covers, printing is good. Prabhupada, you know, made great effort to make these books look very perfect and beautiful. So once in India, had sometimes letters printed upside down, and then the old Bible comes, like you upside down. So Prabhupada came with it, but he spent 10 years laboring to make the books perfect. Just because he did it, it was lovely. Nice good paper. Are any of the things that I mean, that's what they look at. Even though we know that to us the poetry was very beautiful in those early Bhagavatam. Which books are like that? Old. Well, most of the Prabhupada's books, Bhagavatam, Krishna, the Bhakti Rasamrita, and the those are printed with very high quality. Some books are printed in India, the words may make them kind of cheap. I'm not sure. For some of the binding. Yeah, I think there's a balance, as you say. I think the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Chaitanya, and then there's different people too. You know, some are more care more, like people that will buy a whole set of Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Chaitanya from their bookshelves. They will insist on a very high quality book. There's other people that just, you know, want to read the, they're more interested in the content of the book. Talking about physical discussion, or maybe some of the readers, and just want to read it. And later on, if they're really serious, they'll want to treasure the book, they'll buy higher to that position and put it in the bookshelf. That's more, I think, like European, American, Australian, Japanese are more quality conscious. Whereas if you go into the so-called developing countries, they really spend books on lower quality. Because people aren't, they're not, they just don't care so much. And they're not so, it's a bit superficial in one sense. They're more, you know, more feels and maybe they're closer to it. But, you know, it depends on the culture. I mean, probably the majority of books are not written in English. I mean, consider Russian and Portuguese and Spanish. They all come from English. And I know in, I don't know if it's I started publishing books in Russia, in the Russian language. It was the first time that I think almost any, well, I think any mass numbers of books were printed of that high quality. Isn't that correct? Large quantities of books in Russian, Russian related languages were kind of extremely high quality. And it required a big investment, and yet these books actually sold in millions. So, and it's about one of the worst economies in the world. Prabhupada had a vision of how the books would look. Prabhupada would have to have pictures because people, again, in this kind of world, of the modern world, so to speak, they're very enamored with art. In fact, when I was trying to get Prabhupada visa in America, there was one of the forms you could fill out in the immigration form. If the person had a special cultural contribution to the famous performing artist, the famous fine artist, they'd almost immediately get it. Convention and be able to come to get an Indian passport and stay in America for unlimited amount of time. This is part of the idea of filling books with beautiful pictures. So one thing, even when there's stupid paper, somehow you try to get a lot of good color pictures in there because people are completely in love with painting. They're thrilled to see these beautiful pictures. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jāi, Śrīmad Bhāgavatam ki jāi, Śrīla Prabhupāda Centennial ki jāi, Gaura Gaurīdhāri ki jāi.